You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1. Yeah, commuting sucks, but these guys don't.
See, the NHL has a new endorsement deal with Jagermeister.
What's the Overdrive shot? I got one. Burt Reynolds.
I think it's got to be Burt
Reynolds. Got to be a Burt Reynolds. I have no problem with a Burt Reynolds.
We should have Burt Reynolds' recipe in here.
As you were talking, it's funny. I'm on a bearskin rug wearing a fake mustache doing a Burt Reynolds right now.
Nice. How's this hit going to go for you?
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Who the hell's back there? Or what's this song? The porno song.
This is Ice Cube.
You don't know this song?
You've never heard Ice Cube? What planet have you been living on?
It was a good day.
It's one of the all-time great hip-hop tracks. Look at Jonas owning you out of the gate.
Jonas owning me out of the gate? That zit on his forehead is owning me because it's staring at me. Anyway, this is not Ice Cube. This is like a porno song from the 70s.
That's Ice Cube.
No.
Do you know anything about music or no?
I don't really, but that's a garbage song. Whoever that guy is back there, it's not the Grappler. He's busy.
Grappler's busy. That's Steve on the board, who's nice enough to stick around. He was doing Scotty Mack's show, and he's kicking around because the Grappler is working on
other
things.
Okay, well, Steve, that's not part of our program.
No, it is part of the program. I personally asked for Ice Cube. Not today, but a couple of weeks ago, I was going back and forth with Mullen. I said, we got to have that song. I interviewed Ice Cube twice in the summer. He was in studio. It was awesome.
I only got one question for Jonas.
Huh. Okay.
Did you pop the question this summer?
No. Good question, though.
Dude. Good question. You are pushing the limits.
You have been with your girlfriend for a long time.
She's going to pipe your ass. You know that, right? Like, she's going to get rid of you, and you're going to...
She's not.
And I know for a fact you guys were in Europe for a long time.
Oh, there was a Euro vacay? How long, Jonas?
It was 2 weeks in Croatia.
Dude, I guarantee you every night for dinner, she was getting her nails dialed in, ready for the ring to go on.
What were you thinking, Jonas? That was your opportunity, man. Croatia, that's a beautiful country. Very romantic.
It was during the World Cup, too. So there's lots of excitement in Dubrovnik.
Wow. And Croatia went all the way to the finals.
That's a dumbass move, man.
What were you thinking, Jonas?
There's no clock. We do our own thing.
So have you guys made the agreement that you don't need to get married? You can just...
We're not rushing to anything. Why are we talking about my personal life?
Dude, we want to talk to her.
This is Overdrive.
Yeah, and Overdrive will dig in deep and get the scoops.
Yeah, we're always looking for scoop. That's
the typical guy answer. It's like, we don't need to rush things. I guarantee if you got your fiance in a candid moment, she would say, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, I would guess so, too. I think so.
You know her. She's not.
I know her very well, and I like her a lot. She's great. She's very cool.
Well?
Well, I don't know her very well, but we used to work together. I've known Orla for a long, long time. Very cool. Very, very nice woman.
Irish, and just like you're Irish, right? You've got Irish roots.
Oh, she's way more Irish than this guy.
Well, she's like real Irish.
Like legit
Irish. She will not be happy that we're talking about her right now.
Dude, I'm Jeffrey Paul Flanagan O'Neill. How more
Her name's Orla, and she's from Ireland.
Orla is like Polish.
No, dude. Orla is Gaelic, and it's real Irish.
What's her last name?
I'm not telling you.
You know why he doesn't want to tell? And I don't blame you. You shouldn't tell. Because we have lunatic fans of the show that will find her online and send direct messages and be like, be honest, you were hoping that he was going to pop the question when you were in Croatia. I like your line of reasoning, though. It's very Kyle Dubas-esque.
What's that?
Well, we take our time.
We're pushing forward. We're continuing conversation.
Right.
Dialogue open.
Dialogue is always open with Kyle Dubas and whoever he's talking
with. Jonas is Kyle Dubas.
That's right. You guys are very similar. You guys were both in the building last night.
Yep.
And that was exciting.
It was
awesome,
actually.
I gotta be honest.
Actually,
it was awesome to watch a game and to see Tavares go off for two goals and Mitch Marner look great. It's only preseason. The outcome doesn't matter. But if you're a Leaf fan, there's no way you're not just a bit more excited today than you were this time yesterday.
Yeah, not a lot. It's just like... It's like Peter Forsberg in his prime joining...
Yeah.
I mean, what would the... Who was good? Like, going to Detroit.
But when it was like Datsyuk and Zetterberg were like 24, 25.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, you got Forsberg and he's 27 and he's really good. And that's just like a snippet of what the guy, that's what he does every night. He's great down low. Like if you want to talk about players around the net, there's him, there's Patrick Kane, there's Sidney Crosby. There's a group of three or four guys that are the best in the world at getting pucks around the net in tight. Roofing them like he's that good.
Yeah, that's how good
he is. That was a standard. I mean,
oh, it's not like we didn't know this, but we got to see it as a Maple Leaf, and we
that
got
was
to see
like
Marner.
A house league game for him last night. Ottawa put some NHL players out there, but that was kind of the standard. John Tavares, he'll get you the couple points in the power play. He'll dominate in the chemistry with him and Mitch Marner. Him and Mitch Marner. I mean, Hyman, Mike Babcock brought it up last night. He is on that line, too. He'll dig. He'll get them pucks. But those two are going to have a year.
Well, who has he played with that's anything like Marner?
I don't think anybody.
I was trying to come up with guys last night. It's
I mean,
he
played with
Bailey. Oposo.
He's played with Oposo.
Anders Lee. But
Thomas Vanek. Anders Lee.
Matt Molson put up a ton of points.
But none
with him.
Of those guys are like
no,
Marner.
No one's close to Mitch Marner. And you mentioned what Babcock said. I want to play this clip. Because this is so typically Babcockian.
Another guy in the line, his name's Hyman.
So we all love Zach Hyman. I feel like we have to preface any commentary about him on a line.
And his brother, fan of the show.
Yeah, his whole family, right? North Toronto crew. He was in studio this summer, and he said he went to the same burger joint I've been to a million times. He's a good guy. He writes children's books.
Is that Burger Shack on Eglinton?
It is Burger Shack on Eglinton. Great spot. So Babcock couldn't get through one question. One, where it's the first game Tavares is playing. He puts up 3 points. Marner puts up 3 points. Clearly the story of the game. Like, clearly. And I don't know who asked the question. You were in the scrum. Doesn't matter. But
it was a fair question.
Totally fair. Yeah. How about that? Tavares and Marner, they look great tonight. And this is how Babcock responds.
There's another guy on the line. His name's Hyman. He's the guy who keeps getting the puck for him there.
Like, he just couldn't even hold off for 1 second. And the beauty of this is, on the 3 goals they were all involved in, Hyman didn't touch the puck once. The first one was a power play goal. He wasn't on the ice. The second one was Tavares won the draw. Marner won the battle and got it back to the point. Hyman didn't touch the puck. The third one, Tavares created the 2-on-1, tried to get it to Hyman, didn't get it to him. Puts it in the slot for Marner. Marner scores. So the 3 goals that they were responsible for, Hyman didn't touch the puck. And one of them, he wasn't on the ice.
But it's so.
So why is it necessary to say that?
It's so Babcock. And the best part is, like, earlier in the day, did you see the Guy Boucher stuff about one of their prospects? Some of his comments, how over the top they were. Said he had, like, McDavid-like speed. He's like, they hadn't played a preseason game. And he said, there's nothing this guy has to do. He's been great. Babcock is like the complete opposite, where he doesn't want to build it up. And it's probably in this market,
well,
probably
Mike
the right
Babcock,
way.
Yeah,
to do
he's
it.
In a totally different situation. And I've been to some alumni things and I've been around these guys, and you got to make sure that they like themselves. Like, they're a confident group. They got swagger. William Nylander, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews. There's some powerful egos, powerful personalities. All they've been. Had done the last 2 years, Jonas, in a market that's been struggling for success and dying for success, is have people say to them, you guys are gods, you guys are the ones turning around the Maple Leafs, you guys are going to take us to the promised land. So I'm sure Mike knows that his job is to say, hang on a second here.
But to Hayes's point, it was like his first game.
Right.
He's the story. There's like one half quote from Babcock on that line where he says, obviously, like, they were good tonight or something like that.
That's all I'm
that
saying.
That was it.
I totally agree with what you're saying, though.
I know.
Babcock is
perfect
for this
team. He doesn't really care about
the
first exhibition game.
No.
He knows,
nor
how good,
should
he knows how good Marner and Tavares is. You think he's going to sit there and pump their tires and say, oh my God, look how good. We're winning the cup.
He doesn't have to do that. No one's saying, can you tell us that you're going to win the cup?
Okay, all he said was what was needed to be said. They had a good start. They had good chemistry.
He didn't say that. He said there's another guy on the line who was out there getting them the puck all night, insinuating they didn't do anything. It was Hyman that was doing it.
He's made that his deal. He doesn't want to pump the tires and turn it into a big...
No, but he will pump the tires of Hyman and Brown and, you know, the grit grinders, which is fine. I mean, that he's a grit grinding type coach. He wants work ethic. He wants team first. And I get that. I'm not saying that that's the wrong mentality.
Well, it's almost like the time when he's going to pump the tires of Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander and whoever else. It's like the way he talks about Zetterberg, he retired. Datsyuk, it's gone. That's when he gives praise to the players that are fantastic and have done all the work. You'll get your praise when you're done playing. That's when I'll pump your tires. While you're playing, I don't want you to be complacent, and I'm going to push buttons. And it's like the Pat Burns famous quote. He's like, you screw with the players first, because if they start screwing with you, you're fired.
Yep. And I understand that mentality, and I think it's
totally
the right
understand
one.
What, like, just kind of seeing these egos and where they're at, these young kids. They're fantastic players, tremendous talents, but I understand where he is as far as managing them.
Well,
I think he's the guy to do it, because if you had some pigeon in there coaching these guys, they would mow him over. If this Austin Matthews demanded some kind of meeting in Arizona, what the hell would what would Ronnie Rolston be doing?
Well,
like he would be having dinner at Mitch Marner's apartment.
Okay, but Babcock got on the plane and flew down.
I understand.
So let's not pretend
that
like he didn't accept the meeting.
But if he's doing that, what would Ronnie Rolston be doing? He would just be getting destroyed.
It would have been Guy Boucher, right?
Well, he's talking about just a pigeon coach who puts himself.
But if it wasn't Babcock here,
over.
It would have been Guy Boucher,
right? That would have been a real problem, because clearly
Babcock got the nine of hearts right at the last second.
Clearly Babcock was the better option, but I agree with that approach with the kids. They have not achieved anything. John Tavares is different, though.
That's not true completely.
What have they achieved as a team?
They've set like records. Franchise records in their first
regular season records. You're right. I'll grant you that they put up points.
So
and
what?
They put
that's
up
an
numbers.
That's an
and Matthews won rookie of the year. I'm not saying they literally
from being
haven't
garbage
done anything
and all the years before that. But you've been bounced the first two rounds in the playoffs.
Right.
So you know what? You've put up goals. You've put up assists, but you haven't done anything.
Right. But Tavares is different. Tavares walks in. He gets an A immediately. He's a pro. You don't have to treat him with kid gloves. You don't have to worry about him becoming an egomaniac or overly complacent. Because if you are worried about that day one, why did you just give that guy 7 years, $77
million? Mm-hmm.
That seems like a bit of a problem. You know, the kids are different. They're still young. They haven't been in this position yet, you know, with these kind of expectations. Maybe it was there internally this past year, but not externally. Like, the city is on fire, and it deserves to be. Look at what went down last night with that line in particular. You know, tonight Matthews is going in Ottawa. Everyone's writing the same piece. Doesn't matter who's writing it, what paper it is, what network it is, it's the exact same piece. This guy looks like he's possessed. He's going to go off. It has the makings of being a thoroughly entertaining and successful season. So it's on Babcock to try to rein that in. You knew that was going to be the case. He was going to be uncomfortable with the world handing them success before they actually go out there and achieve it. But that was just such a layup. It was like Pierre Dorion last night. Dorion got a layup on the pregame show. A layup. What are you optimistic about? And he went baby monkey, curb your enthusiasm, and just completely ruined everything.
We're a team.
And the same thing with Babcock last night. First game, Tavares, wow, that looked good. He just wasn't comfortable enough in being like, yeah, that was fun, that was great. They're off to a good start. We got to get better. Hyman, I thought, played well. Has to start immediately with, there's a third guy on the line. He's the one out there getting them the puck the whole night.
I don't know why he would do that, for the simple fact that just lay off of Hyman. Like, you don't want to, like, the guys must be in the locker room. Oh, you know, your dad thought you played good. That's what they call the guy that the coach loves. No, your dad loved your game tonight again. Your dad this, your dad that. It's like, you ever heard him be critical of Zach Hyman? You could say he stunk tonight or he's got to be better. Never. No, they work like Brown and Hyman.
Well, Hyman never has been off that top line. He never went down to the fourth line. He never got demoted. Now, he doesn't put himself in a position to be demoted because he plays the same way every night. And that's why you appreciate who he is. He works his ass off. He checks like a machine. Kills penalties. But he's going to get a lot of opportunities playing with those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an opportunity for him to shut a lot of people up. That he can score 20 goals in the league. because he's going to get ample opportunities to score 20 and put up 50-plus points if he's with those two every night all season long. If everyone stays healthy, it's going to be a matchup nightmare for coaches throughout the NHL.
Well, and can't you see a situation where Marner, Tavares kind of compete with Nylander, Matthews, just in terms of like, oh, those guys are going tonight? Yeah, you know, we can go too. Do you know what I mean? Like, or if the opposing coach puts his best guys against those guys, you know, they're going to put these guys against us. Do you know what I mean? Like, can you see I could see a situation where if I'm Austin Matthews and I see John Tavares playing well and putting up numbers, that kind of fuels me to go even higher.
It's a motivational tact. Like, it's preseason. It means nothing. I'll guarantee you Matthews goes off tonight. I wouldn't be shocked if he puts on a clinic in Ottawa tonight. Yeah. Where you're like, dude.
You guys had your chance last night. Everyone's talking about you. Well, this is what I'm going to do.
Wait until the big boy shows up tonight. I could see him putting on a clinic. And it doesn't mean anything. It's the second preseason game. He's playing with Tyler Ennis, and Nylander still hasn't worked out a contract. And that whole conversation, you talk about watching paint dry. I can't do it anymore. It's almost, we're in lockout mode here. Where every day it's like, did they meet? Did they talk? Did anything come out of it? Are they negotiating? Are they going to play? I've hit a point with Nylander. Let me know when he's signed, and then we'll talk about it after that. I can't keep having conversations every day. Will it be a bridge? What about Reinhardt's deal? What about this? Sign it. Let me know what the numbers are. Get you in camp. Let's get rocking.
You wonder, Morrissey kind of fast-track Nurse?
I think they're different players. Like, Reinhardt got 2 years, 3.65? That's cheap. Like, he had 50 points a year ago.
Five more goals than Nylander.
So, we'll see. I mean, McKenzie was tweeting about it earlier that there's dialogue. Dubas has been saying that consistently. And I don't think they're at a point today where it's a big concern, but this time next week, for a week away from the season starting, I think you want them to play a couple of preseason games.
But it's going to happen, right? Like, it's not like, that's why I'm not really so focused on it, because they're going to sign a contract.
Right.
Like you said, we just don't know what it's going to look like. And, like, come April, we're not going to remember, or we're not going to talk about this.
Yeah, Sam Reinhardt, 23 goals, 17, 25.
Second overall pick. That's a team that needs help, needs depth. I credit Buffalo. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
So we'll see what that means for Nylander. I'm not sure it's a comparable. I mean, the Leafs would probably like it to be, but McKenzie again was tweeting today that by all accounts, the two sides, they want to work out a long-term deal. You know, that's evident, but I think my impression, just based on finally getting this team on the ice, it's too exciting talking about the play as opposed to contract concerns and cap concerns. And I understand that it's hanging over the organization because they have all these guys that are coming up, and it's a unique scenario, and guys are going to have to get paid. But enjoy it while you can, man, because this team, once everyone's on it and everyone's healthy, they have the potential to be very, very good.
Would you be more worried if you were Kyle Dubas about the potential of Marner having a huge year and raising his value in terms of that second contract, or Matthews?
Marner, for sure.
Because, like, there's a ceiling on Matthews,
yeah.
Basically?
Matthews, McDavid set a ceiling. I don't think he's hitting that. But McDavid set it, regardless of it being 2 years removed. But Marner could be anywhere from, I don't know, $6 million to $9 million, $9.5 million. I don't
nine.
Know where he lands.
How about, like, $10.5 million?
Now, 11? Kucherov signed at $9.5 million. He's not getting more than that. Kucherov just had 100 points and 85 the year before. Mitch Marner, he's going to be in the exact same position as Nylander. No arbitration. This idea that, like, this is what I've loved the past couple of days. And we've had people call into the hotline and pose this question. Well, Lou Lamoriello is going to sign him to an offer sheet. Why? That doesn't happen in the league, and it takes two to tango. Why would Marner sign it just because Lou puts it in front of him? The player's actually got to sign the offer sheet for it to come into
fruition.
Well,
if you had a redonkulous offer sheet in front of you, wouldn't you sign it?
Do you want, if unless
Why do you,
you
think
what if
Dustin
you want to play
Penner
there?
Signed the offer sheet in Edmonton? Do you think he wanted to leave Anaheim and go to Edmonton? Do you know why he signed the offer sheet?
They offered him a lot of money.
That's right.
Yeah.
So why, that's the only reason you would sign it on. That's a ridiculous comment.
But do you really think they're going to offer him, what, $13 million a year?
Who knows?
If they do, see you later. Like, that's the reality. If you do, then you got to leave. And the Leafs will get four first-round picks. And you're not. I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. My point being is, I don't think, like, these scare tactics are always out there. They don't happen. Every year we have the same conversation. Well, someone's going to sign him to an offer sheet. Well, then why isn't anybody doing that with Nylander? He's got back-to-back 60-point seasons. No one's even sniffed it out. It never came close. So why all of a sudden is it going to happen with someone else?
But what happens if Marner has 90 points? Like, how do you navigate that contract? What's he worth? And for how long?
Well, he'd be worth a lot of money for a lot of term.
And to your point, like, he doesn't have leverage, but he can say, I'm not signing.
That's fine.
X number
once you
of years.
Get once you get through a certain amount of time in the summer and you know offer sheets aren't coming in, then you say, go ahead, sit in Thornhill for 3 weeks. Like, but that's the reality. Like, at some point, you just say, sorry, man, like, this is the offer. And that's what's going to happen with Nylander.
Yeah, there's no choice.
This is what we're offering you. Call us when you're ready to take it.
And there's been so much talk about the organization, and everybody wants to keep this core together. But I think in this day and age, it's not 1993 anymore. I think there's
players are way more empowered.
Yeah, they're millennials. They love themselves, and it's, I want this, I want that. Even in the early stages of these guys playing out their contracts, and Nylander hasn't even been done yet, I just wonder how this could actually work with everyone going forward.
Well, what's scary about that is, again, they haven't won anything.
No kidding.
You talk about regular
season
success.
It's like Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, they got their money after two or three cups.
Three cups. It kicked in after the third.
Yeah, kicked in after their third cup, and these guys are demanding the world after nothing.
Right, exactly.
Nothing. Some 20-goal season, 60-point season, and it's like...
But that's not fair. They deserve
a big chunk, man.
What do you do?
You get the big chunk. You win three Stanley Cups. You get the big chunk. I don't know.
Yeah, but we're talking about the next 8 years, let's say. Matthews deserves whatever, 11,
Austin
12,
Matthews,
13.
He deserves whatever. He's a superstar. He's going to score 40 goals a year. He's the you-know-what. Like, he's the real deal. Mm-hmm. But everybody else, oh, yeah, give me the money. Give me the money. Really? How about win and then get the money? They win a cup, you can pay them all out the ass. I don't care. But just seems like it's like I told you off the top of the show, everyone's just been pumping their tires. You're the new gods. You're going to turn this around. You guys are great. And they are great players. They're fantastic talents. But those other guys in Chicago, they won three Stanley Cups. And then, you know what? They got paid and double digit on the salary cap for both of them. And they've been garbage ever since.
Well, the team's been garbage ever since. And Chicago's in trouble again this year. It sounds like Corey Crawford isn't... I don't even think he's in camp yet.
Murphy, the defenseman, out 8 weeks.
Right.
It's already starting to hit the fan.
Kunitz is on their top line.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider, will be in Studio 5. Jerry's Percentages at 5:30. Steve Phillips coming up. Marley Rivera of ESPN was on with Scotty Mack today. Blasphemous take. Blasphemous. Okay, I'm not saying she doesn't know this or hasn't heard it or doesn't think it's a possibility, but if it actually does ever fall onto the desk of Mark Shapiro, or if he even entertains the idea, he will be shipped out of town real quick.
Should be.
We'll tell you about that next.
For the first time in the history of the organization, he was complimentary of number 92. A coach had positive things to say about 92.
Igor Ozyganov.
Odoganov.
I thought you were going to say Josh Levo, because he mentioned him last night, too.
That's where I thought you were going.
Yeah, right?
Unprovoked, he actually said he liked Josh Levo.
Odoganov.
I thought he looked pretty good. I thought Justin Hall looked pretty good. You know, I think they've got some options there. And we were talking on the phone last night. Odoganov is 26.
And I think going to be... 27, or maybe did
well, and Hall. The point I'm making is everyone looks at Hall, and there's this stigma about being in the AHL for so long, and you're 27, and there's a reason you've been. Well, this guy's 26, not like he's 19 coming over.
Oh,
right. So the point being is the KHL is no better than the American Hockey League. So if Hall can do it in the A, why can't he do it in the NHL if you feel like Odoganov can do it in the K and step right into the NHL?
But what's different with him is he barely played at times last year in the KHL.
Odoganov. Yeah. Exactly.
You've got to stop using that name, or I'm going to start.
No, it's Odogonov.
Now on, it's Odogonov.
He doesn't speak much English, so I can't ask.
I want to do
you.
A one-on-one Duthie interview with Odogonov, and just say, Odogonov, do you know who used to wear that number?
He speaks like very little English.
Well, Babcock was pumping his tires about going to English lessons 5 days a week, and he's really committed. You can tell who was a part of the recruitment there.
Yeah, no,
it was pretty clearly Mike Babcock was recruiting him heavily.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And Par Lindholm, too, who he's talked up pretty
heavily.
There
you go. Well, Lindholm plays tonight, so I'm curious to see what Par Lindholm has in store for us this evening. That game can be heard right here on TSN 1050. Puck drop at 7:30, pregame at 7. You can watch it on TSN 4 tonight. Steve Phillips on the Blue Jays. Them winning road games all of a sudden. John Gibbons, where could he end up by the end of the year? And Marley Rivera of ESPN was on with Scotty Mack earlier, and she threw out a name that you have to be prepared to hear when we start talking about prospective managers of the Blue Jays going forward. And it is a name that is going to shock people. We'll tell you about that in 2 minutes.
What kind of cologne you rocking there, Al? Smell good, buds.
All right. Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
No, I'm just saying.
At all. So we're going to get to Steve Phillips here in a second, but Marley Rivera of ESPN, who's friends with Scotty Mack, and she comes on with Scotty from time to time, and they were, I don't even know how they came across the conversation. What's going to happen with the next manager in Toronto? We all know Gibbons is out of here.
Tough to buy into this one.
And Marley Rivera said, don't be surprised if you hear the name John Farrell come up because of his connection with Cleveland and Shapiro. John Farrell is a name that may come up at some point. She didn't say he's going to get hired.
Is there a more hated person like in this market when he said, I'm leaving here, I got my dream job coming up in Boston, I'm out of here?
He's Vince Carter is what he is.
Yeah, everyone was like, that guy's dead to me.
Right. And Mark Shapiro has been very tone deaf in terms of this market and the history.
What are you saying? He's just going to pull the trigger on that?
No, I don't think he's that stupid. If he even entertains it, though, I think he should be fired immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Fired immediately if it pops into his head. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN Jays analyst. You agree with me, right, Steve? Fired immediately if Shapiro even thinks of the name John Farrell.
Listen, I think Odogonov's got a better chance of being the manager than does John Farrell of the Blue Jays. So, okay.
You like Odogonov, Steve?
Oh, isn't that the cologne that he's wearing, Odogonov?
Yes, it's a new line.
It's mine soon, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. It's impressive. Look, the reason it's brought up is that John Farrell did work for Mark Shapiro in Cleveland before. And, you know, he's one of the assistants in the office. He looked at the pitching in the organization. And, you know, when he kind of got started before managing, he was working for Shapiro. So, you know, there's a personal relationship and connection there. And then I think people look at it and say, well, they brought John Gibbons back twice. Why wouldn't they consider John Farrell again? But that's a lot different, right? And we all know that it's a lot different. I think it's unlikely. Now, partly why Farrell's name comes up is that, you know, there is some speculation that the Jays are going to be looking for, what we do as general managers is we replace the guy we had with sort of the mirror image, the antithesis of who we had. So if you got a player's manager, you bring in the strict guy after that. If you have a strict guy, you bring in the player's manager after that. And I think that Gibby is probably perceived more as an easygoing sort of veteran manager, and that, you know, if you're going to go younger, you're going to bring in somebody who's a little bit more hands-on and micromanaging and you know, on the young guys, kind of teaching them how to be professionals. And you know, so Farrell's more, not so much of the put your arm around you and hug you and pat you on the back guy as he is sort of more of a stern approach. So that's probably why that name comes up in the connection to Shapiro. The name that I think is more likely is Mike Matheny as getting a good look at the Toronto job. He had success in St. Louis. People can say, well, they let him go and things turned around there. They also completely flipped their roster for the new manager, Mike Schilt, there. And maybe Matheny's, voice had lost its connection with the players, but he is a really good baseball guy, well-respected in the industry, and a guy that, fits sort of the model of the Shapiro-Atkins, personality type that they might consider bringing in.
Steve, Shapiro's got to understand that he's probably not the most popular guy in this market. Wouldn't that, baseball executives aren't stupid. They kind of know their perception. It hasn't gone well since he took over, whether it's his fault or it's not his fault, trying to rebuild. You would have to know that Farrell is just it's just not even an option to do that.
Yeah, no, I think he's not tone deaf. To your point, I think Mark Shapiro is a really smart guy. You know, the issue for Shapiro and Atkins is this position that they're in and the perception that fans have of them, I believe, was inevitable. It was set up that it was going to be this way because, you know, what Alex Anthopoulos did is he went for it. And he, you know, we celebrate the playoff run. Then they go back the next year. But clearly they were getting older. Those veteran players were going to tail off and go out of the organization. And there was going to be some rebuilding. And when you go from finally getting back to the playoffs and reigniting your fan base and bringing them out, and then, you know, within a couple of years, sort of putting a barrel over the you know, you're putting a barrel over the sort of light that got lit again, it can frustrate people. So, but this was somewhat predictable. So it's not a surprise to Shapiro and Atkins that people are a little bit frustrated by it. Their belief is that people will come back once they realize this was the right thing to do and that they are rebuilding, that they're going to bring young players back and they're going to try to turn this into what they had success to do in Cleveland. And, oh, by the way, maybe they'll have more resources to spend money because it's a different market to do even a bit more than what Cleveland's been able to do with the run of success they put together there.
Does Matheny seem like the more realistic guy because he's a former catcher, he's not that old, and it's not like the fresh face of a Cora or a Boone in New York where it's like they want to be the guy's buddies and help them along with extremely talented teams because the Jays, they don't have that.
Yeah, you know, it feels to me that it's, you know, I mean, the Jays, to rebuild, you could go and bring in a young manager and grow with some teeth cutting, right, that they can make some mistakes, and it's not going to matter because you're not going to be competing initially out of the gate anyways, necessarily next year, and so you could grow with a manager. On the other side of it, you know, you could go with a more veteran guy who's not going to make those mistakes, who could be that sort of manager that can manage a young team, and the developmental team and turn them into a playoff contending team. You know, managers sometimes get categorized, right, wrong, and different. You know, we all label sort of people in the world and in the jobs that they do. So there are the rebuilding managers. Then those managers that once you have a winning team, then you bring that guy in. Like, I look at Buck Showalter in Baltimore and think he doesn't want to go through the next 4 years of rebuilding in Baltimore. Like, he's the guy that gets the most out of what you have to give you a chance to get to the playoffs. But when I talk about rebuilding, he's not there. I don't look at Girardi at this stage of his career as going, like, he started in Miami back in the day. I don't see him going back to Miami and doing it, and I don't necessarily see him coming to Toronto. You know, Matheny's still sort of a step in his in the sort of level of his career below where Girardi has gotten. So I think Girardi waits for that next playoff contender. You know, like the Nationals get frustrated with their manager and they go bring in a Girardi. But you know, the challenge for those guys who have managed and have some experience is that the pay level for managers is different now. Like, Alex Cora and Aaron Boone are making under $1 million a year. You know, Joe Girardi was making $4 million. And the Blue Jays aren't paying Joe Girardi $4 million to manage a rebuilding team and do that. That's not going to work. Matheny, you know, would be somewhere, you know, between where the rebuilding guy or the young managers, rookie managers are, and where Girardi was, where maybe there's a fit there. But I think that the price tag is going to be part of this, and there's going to have to be a level of acceptance of those guys who have managed previously that maybe the money's not there like it used to be for managers.
When you go to the top of the AL East, I mean, do you think it's good for a team to be just dummying the opponents all year long? I think the Red Sox have had some bullpen issues. I mean, they're so good and so far ahead. I'm not sure what you think about that. The Yankees, there's been reports they're calling that a dumpster fire right now, and it's just any other division they're probably leading. What do you make of just beating up on teams so far ahead going into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, there doesn't seem to be a direct correlation when you go back and look at, you know, teams that have run away with it, teams that have done this and that. Some of them go on and win, some of them don't. And, you know, the baseball playoff is rarely about the best team winning at all. It's about the team that plays the best. And you know, that on any given day, you know, the team that's worst in baseball can beat the team that's best in baseball on a given day. It could just happen. Mm-hmm. And in a short series, funny things can happen. And I have to tell you that I look at the Boston Red Sox right now, and I would actually, You know, the problem is that Houston and Cleveland are going to play each other out of the gate and eliminate one or the other. I like both of them more than I like the Boston Red Sox because I think they both have deeper starting pitching. They both have better bullpens, and they both have good offenses. Maybe not as good as Boston, but good offenses, and good pitching can shut down good hitting. I look at the Red Sox. The Red Sox don't have a single starter on their staff that has won a postseason game as a starter. Not a single one. Chris Sale's postseason ERA is higher than David Price's postseason ERA. David Price is the only starter on the team that has wins in the postseason. He has two, and those are both in relief. And so I don't know what to make out of the Red Sox, and their bullpen's a little dicey right now, too, and Mookie Betts' side's a little bit sore right now. I look at the Yankees and think they might just be getting hot at the right time because they're going to, if they win the wild card game, they're going to play the Red Sox, and I could see them beating the Red Sox because Tanaka and Happ are bull pitching really well. If they get Severino right, they've got a much better bullpen than Boston, and I think that you know, momentum matters. And with Aaron Judge coming back into the lineup, I could see the Yankees over the last 10 games start to get hot and run through the Red Sox in that division series.
You talked about Kershaw. I saw one of your tweets today about him reinventing himself before he needed to, and could he be after something else other than the $65 million that is owed to him in the next 2 years? What's better than $65 million over the next 2 years?
Yeah, here's the thing, is that you look at the New York Yankees right now, they don't, you know, you look at their starting staff and think, could they get out on a guy like Kershaw? And would they do 3 years? Because Kershaw, if he waits, you know, he's going to go back out to free agency at 33, and we've learned what the market says about those guys. Mm-hmm. And so if he can squeeze out a third year or a fourth year from somebody, he's already got two, right? But what if the Yankees was there? All right, we'll give you a third year at $33 million a year, $35 million a year, or we'll give you a fourth year to do that. And what other teams might be willing to jump in and give him? So he's not going to get a five-year. But why not explore if you can get something more than that? Now, I would suspect the Dodgers make a deal there. But the thing you have to think about Kershaw is his velocity is dropping. He's pitching at 91 right now, not 95. And yesterday, for the first time since 2010, he walked more to gain than he struck out. Now, he did it in the playoffs last year, and the strikeout numbers aren't nearly what they've been in the past. He still can manage a game with the best of them, and he's still really good. And I might give him the third year and you know, make a three-year deal and maybe even a four-year deal, but I wouldn't go to a five-year deal with him. But somebody might. Somebody might.
Great stuff, Steve. We'll do it again next week. Thanks, man.
Terrific, guys. Thanks for having me.
Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB and Jays analyst. Look at Larry King over there. How many questions in a row did you ask? I think that's a record. We have to review the tape, but I don't believe you've ever asked like four or five questions in a row.
Non-hockey related?
Even hockey related. Dude, if your mom was on here, if we're interviewing your mom, I would have to jump in after two or three in a row.
I don't know. I just, you know, I love baseball, and I had some questions for Steve. And
great stuff, dude. Yeah, like all of them quality questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't have anything to add. Jonas was useless.
Jonas.
I had a question, but you were asking everything.
Had his little head buried right in his ass. He had nothing going on.
I think Jonas is on, like, People's.
I'm on Fangraphs.
Jared's. No,
Jared's.
You're on a diamond.
Jerry's.
Jerry's.
Jerry's Jewelers.
Come to Jerry's.
Buy a ring.
Every kiss begins with Jerry.
Jerry's. Final segment brought to you by Jerry's Jewelers.
Every kiss begins with Jerry.
We have to do that for all of the really corny jewelry bits that are on radio and TV and all the jingles, right?
There's Jerry's always... Percentages is brought to you by Jerry's Jewelers,
right,
and BPC.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to be a combination of Best Portuguese Chicken and Jerry's Jewelries.
Every kiss begins with Jerry.
Your girlfriend's going to strangle somebody.
Including us, maybe.
Basically, by the way, the two of us.
Can I mention this? Mark Masters came out of retirement for trivia. He's ready to go again if you guys want.
Next time Noodles is out of town, bring that loser in here.
You guys are 0-2. You realize that,
well,
right?
Well, we're now 0-3. We lost during our little podcast live event.
Oh, I heard about that, actually.
Thanks for stealing our material, bringing it on your other event.
Okay, we'll get into that a little bit later on, because I want to hear more about that. I meant to bring that up. I heard Masters came out of retirement, and okay, we'll get to that. Jonah Siegel's in here from The Athletic.
But just think, Orla, you could say to Orla, you could get Jerry to say, like, Orla, come and get your ring!
We could set that up for you.
Yeah. Come and get your engagement ring!
Are you going to stick around for the rest
of
the show?
She's going to come and kill you.
No, she's going to kill you, dude. That's the beauty of
this. Because you're not engaged.
Darren Dreger and Jerry's Percentages.
Brought to you by BPC
and
Jerry's Jewelers. Every kiss begins with Jerry.